Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Experience travel the way it's meant to be. Fully guided and extraordinary.
Well, first this morning, Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley is in studio here. He's been with the club since 2016, and in that time, they've won the league four times in a row and the FAI Cup in 2019. He played for clubs in Ireland and in England and for Ireland at under 21 before becoming a manager, and his name has been linked to several high-profile jobs abroad. But today, he's here in his role as a Daffodil Day ambassador for the Irish Cancer Society, a cause that's really close to his own heart. Stephen Bradley, morning to you. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to see you. Listen, before we talk about Daffodil Day, I want to get you to know you a little more. Tell me about growing up in West Dublin, and when did you get noticed for your soccer skills?
Yeah, like you said, growing up in Tala, playing football like most of the kids, playing sport, and I knew I had some sort of ability. At the age of 11, Chelsea came in and asked me to move over to England. My man back then threw me on a plane and sent me over on my own, which wouldn't happen nowadays. Mm-hmm. But it was an amazing experience, and from then on, there was interest from clubs all around Europe.
It was amazing, and you ended up in Arsenal at one stage, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I went to Arsenal not long after Chelsea. And when the time came to decide where to go and live and to sign professionally, we chose Arsenal mainly because of the Irish connection. Liam Brady was there, and we got on really well with Liam. Really nice man,
nice guy.
Nice guy, and he understood what it took for an Irish kid to leave Dublin and move to London and move to England. So all that connection, and then him and mam had a brilliant relationship. So all that played its part in me picking Arsenal.
It must have been exciting when you think about it now. Like, you were so young over there. Did you love it?
I loved it. You're living every kid's dream. You're playing professional football. It's the best life in the world. You're out in a green field kicking a ball around for a living. It doesn't get much better than that.
Tell me about your dad before we talk about your amazing mum. I think he left the family when you were only 9. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. He left the family home. And moved away, and we didn't see of him after that, and that was a difficult one to take as a young kid growing up. All young boys look up to the father, so that's a difficult one to take. But the really special thing that came out of that was the relationship and the bond with my mum, and my two brothers became incredibly strong.
She was amazing, wasn't she? Now, I know she sadly passed away 10 years ago, and we'll talk about that because it was cancer, but she was an amazing woman, wasn't she? Like, bringing you up, the three of you on your own.
Yeah, an incredible woman. Wore three jobs. We had nothing, but we had everything. We felt like we had the world, which was special. She's a special woman. She was my agent, my mom, my advisor. She was an incredible person. She dealt with incredibly big clubs around Europe like they were a local club. She didn't care, because at the bottom of it all she wanted was best for her son, and while she was juggling all that, she had me two brothers as well to bring up. So an incredible woman, and like I said, gave us everything that we had in life, and she's made me and my brothers what we are today.
Amazing. And were you okay then? So you had a great career, really, very young, over in England. I think you came back to play then here in Ireland. Were you disappointed? Because I suppose you were nearly there to play, say, for the first team in Arsenal. But although I think you were in the reserves, weren't you?
Yeah. I was captain of the reserves for a while. But I got stabbed over there in London. I got stabbed in the head and nearly died. And so I couldn't play for over a year. And at that point in time, a year in football is a really, really long time. And especially in England, the industry moves so quickly. So that meant I had to come home, and I couldn't play football for a long time because the injury was so close to my brain, so I couldn't play any contact sport for so long. And again, my mum stepped in, because for that year I hated the world, hated football. And that year my mum stepped in then and got hold of me and got me back playing and focused again.
Do you mind me asking about the stabbing? What happened?
I probably brought it on myself. I know that's strange to say. No one deserves to be stabbed, but I was spending money in the wrong areas, and the wrong people were noticing. And I went out for a meal one night, came home to the house, and three people broke in and put a gun to my head and then stabbed me in the head and broke my ribs. And the doctor said I was literally a millimetre away from dying, because your natural reaction is to protect yourself. So the blade went around my head rather than into my brain, which was quite scary to hear. And then I woke up in the hospital and with my mum and my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, around me, which was, yeah, really hard.
When you think about back on that now, do you try to park it and not think about it, or do you think, I'm so lucky to be alive?
I think you got to learn from it. You got to understand why it happened and how it happened. And I think you got to try and, as much as possible, make every life experience help you and make you better and stronger. And I've tried to do that. It's taken time, of course, because you're angry for a long time. Yeah. But I think it's really important, especially young men. And myself being a young man at the time, I learned to talk about it and open up. And that really helped me. And I always say to any young person, but especially young men, if they're having problems, speak, because it's it definitely helps.
Yeah, and you're doing a run after this for mental health on that, aren't you? Yeah,
yeah, I am. Yeah, a Shamrock Rovers fan is doing a run and asked me would I help them, so I'm going to do it.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Now listen, your mum, your beautiful mum, she died of cancer. What kind of cancer did she have? And I know that's one of the reasons, only one, but that's why you're involved with Daffodil Day.
Yeah, she had colon cancer, so she had it in the bell first of all, and then it spread to the liver. So, and she fought for years. And in the end, unfortunately, her body just couldn't take anymore. And she was a fighter, incredible, strong woman. And anyone who's seeing cancer or being close to it understands the toll it takes on people. And at the end, she just got tired. She just couldn't do it anymore. And she passed.
And now you have a lovely family of your own, Stephen. Your wife, Emma, who you mentioned earlier. You've got three gorgeous kids. Tell me about Josh. What kind of a kid is he?
He's a special kid. He's like a normal 8-year-old when he got diagnosed. Just going around playing, messing in school, doing normal things. And then when we got the news that he got ALL, it changed everything. And
that's leukemia.
Yeah, leukemia. Yeah, and it changed everything for us, obviously, as a family, but for him as a kid. And you can see it's shaping his personality and his character and what he is today. He's very headstrong. He has really, really strong opinions.
Good for him.
He's fearless. He's going to be a special person. He's going to achieve special things in life.
When did you first notice there was something might be wrong with Josh?
Maybe 6 weeks before we went away on holiday. He was training with the local team and came off with a sore back and knee. And brought him to see the physio and the doctor in the club, and they just said, look, he might have a muscle spasm, let's keep an eye on it. The next time I brought him, maybe 5 days later, they said it could be a few different things, but at the end of the sentence, the doctor mentioned the word leukemia, cancer, and he never said it, but he'd mentioned it, and it was in the back of my mind, because I've always scared of that word, because my mum. And then the next time, we went on holiday, and he couldn't move, so we came home, brought him to see the doctor. And he said, we need to rush him to Crumlin here to get bloods. And within the hour, we had the phone call. You need to get to the hospital, like, you know. So the doctor came in. We were waiting. We were waiting for the doctor to come. And it was like he was making a lawyer of us. He was jumping around the room. He was laughing. He was joking. And my wife was laughing, saying, the doctors are going to think we're messing here. And then my wife went home to get some rest because we were up all night, and the doctor came in and said, we need to speak to the two of you. And at that moment, I knew it was really serious. And so my wife came down to the hospital. We sat down with the doctor and she told us the dreaded news. And right then, in that moment, your world stops, it changes you.
Mm-hmm. How did you both do that? I suppose because Josh is there as well, do you have to stay positive for him? Like, and did you have to be strong for Emma as well? Like, how did you deal with it?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult. You both have your days where it's really tough for you. You have your days as a family that's tough. But I think we've been incredibly strong as a family. We decided that we were just going to live in the moment and in the hour and not look at the treatment that he had ahead of him. Because if he did that, 3 years of treatment, it really blow your mind, and it's a tough one to look at. So we just took it back to the day. Let's face the day that's in front of us. And I think we've done that really well. We've lived our life. Some families, and understandably so, when the kid gets sick, they put the life on hold. They don't go on holidays. They don't do normal things. And we've done the opposite of that. We've tried to live as normal as possible. And I think we're trying to send a message to Josh that yeah, you're sick, but you're, we're going to get through this and you're going to live a normal life, and this is the hand we've been dealt with and this is how we're going to play the hand. So I think I get a lot of credit because maybe I'm in the public eye and people see me and hear me a lot more, but my wife's been incredible and how she's dealt with. She's been the real strong one behind the whole family, so she's a special woman.
Oh, that's so nice. And what about him himself? How is he, and how did he cope with losing his hair, for instance?
Good question, because that's the bit that really hurt him. When we were in the hospital, I never forget sitting in the room in St John's Ward, and you're isolated, and there's a big glass panel looking out into a garden where all the sick kids go to play. And at this moment of time, Josh was just starting intense treatment, so he had his hair. But he looked out and saw some kids that were further along the treatment outside playing, but they had no hair. They'd lost their hair at that stage. And he said to me and my wife, "Oh, look at them poor kids, they have no hair." And we knew that was the stage that was coming for him. And we had to sort of explain to him over the next few days, that's going to happen yourself, Josh. And he couldn't get his head around that for quite some time. So we all shaved our heads and we did a fundraiser at the time just to make him feel a little bit more comfortable. And then I didn't realise the toll it took on Josh until we, about 9 months later, we went to get his first, because he wore a cap everywhere he went. And we went to get his first haircut. And then the back of the car, he said to me, "I can take off my hat now. I don't need to be scared." And I thought, Jesus, that's, it was really powerful, like, you know. So the losing the hair, obviously really, really scared him, you know.
Which you can completely understand. And I know, because some people like to do it, so do I. You often go up to your mum's grave, don't you, and talk to her when you're worried about things like this.
Yeah. I do, yeah. I'm sure there's people out there that have seen me there that think I'm mad. I take my cap and chair up. I have my big jacket on, I put my hood up and I sit down at the grave and spend time just talking to my mum. Most days I'd fall asleep there, and I've often had women and men wake me up and tell me to go home. And but I do get real peace out of that. I get real peace out of, I do feel she's with me. So I get real peace out of going up there and speaking to her and letting her know what's going on in the world.
Yeah, I really understand that. And how is Josh now in terms of treatment and stuff?
He's incredible. Yeah, he's brilliant. We've just finished another round of treatment, which is difficult for that week. It's really difficult on the body, emotionally, makes him a different kid.
Is that chemotherapy, basically?
Chemotherapy, yeah. And steroids for the week. Yeah. And it's a heavy dose. And most parents that are going through would know that's the worst week of the treatment. You have one of them weeks a month, and it's really heavy. So when he's in that week, it's a difficult week for him and for us. But when he's out of it, he's a normal kid. He's just turned 11 last week, and he's back playing football with his friends. He's swimming with the school. He's playing GI. He's doing everything.
He'll run the world. And of course, he's a celebrity now in the League of Ireland, isn't he? I mean, players, it was lovely, I thought, from all clubs rallied around you and your family. And of course, he was front and centre in club celebrations, Josh.
Yeah, the players and obviously Shamrock Rovers, the team, were incredible. I made a decision, myself and my wife, to be really open and upfront with the group, because they're going on that journey with us. Mm-hmm. And we opened up and they've been incredible with Josh. They have him in the dressing room, they have him in training, and they just treat him as a normal kid, which is nice. But the support we've had from people up and down the country, each and every club, fans up and down the country, I still get letters, emails, texts to this day. Mass cards, incredible support we've had up and down the country, and we're very lucky to have that. My position is obviously in the public eye, and so a lot of people know it. So we have incredible support, and from us, our family, from me, I can't thank people enough. When you open a letter on a Monday morning, whether you've won, lost, or drawn the game, and you're reading a letter about how proud they are that Josh is getting through his treatment and wishing him well, it puts everything into perspective, and it really does help you on the journey.
Yeah, because actually I know you won on Friday night. Congratulations, Shamrock Rovers beat St. Pat's. But do you find that as the manager of such a big team, and it's a high-pressure job, that because of Josh's illness, you look at everything quite differently? Or it's not as important as it was? I mean, it's important, but it's not life
changing. No, it's definitely made me a better manager. Without a shadow of a doubt, it's made me better, because like you said, it gives me perspective. I've had days when I've been standing on the touchline And when you're in that 90 minutes, you do everything possible to win the game. That's why we do it. And if I didn't feel that, I wouldn't do the job. But I also know when I leave that, we're going back to the hospital or I've been there that morning. And there's kids in there that are really, really sick, and parents in there that are really worried. And you've had conversations with them that day. And yeah, if you lose the game, you're disappointed, of course you are. But within the next morning, you moved on because you understand that there's other battles as well that we have to fight. And Josh is number one.
And it's good perspective for players too, of course. Now, your name's always linked to big managerial jobs abroad because you're such a good manager. But I assume whilst Josh is still in treatment, is that something in the future maybe you'll be looking at?
Yeah, again, I've been lucky enough to have approaches from clubs, but there's nothing in the world that would have made me move the last 2.5 years. Regardless of any job, your son's your son, and Josh comes before anything. Family comes before anything. And that will never change. Well, please God, this summer we get the all clear, which we're hoping for. But like you said, Josh's treatment has been number one.
Well, look, Stephen Bradley, lots of messages. One I'll give you. Phelan and Talis says, great to hear Stephen talking about his warrior son, Josh. I have inoperable prostate cancer and Stephen has been an incredible source of support and encouragement to me as a Shamrock Rovers volunteer since my diagnosis in September 2023. Stephen's a remarkable man. That's so lovely. And you are. Listen, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Daffodil Day is on March the 28th. And if any of our listeners have been affected by anything in our conversation, you can, of course, go to Irish Cancer Society's website, which is cancer.ie, and their free phone support line this morning and every morning is 1-800-200-700. Best of luck, Stephen, to you, Emma, Josh and all your beautiful children. Best of luck for Shamrock Rovers too.
We'll take
a break.
Thank you.
Lots of people texting about Stephen Bradley. Stephen Bradley and Miriam there again showing what an impressive man he is. Great radio too.